In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage. We've got part one of a special two-part Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock for you today. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me is Arish Khan, the Canadian musician, songwriter, producer, artist, writer, and activist, best known by his stage name King Khan. In part one, we talk about his Global Solidarity Forever Foundation, his relationship with fellow activist and one-time Black Panther Malik Rahim. We speak about the documentary The Invaders that Khan did the soundtrack for. We also talk about the Just Insulin initiative taking place in New Orleans and how the Crescent City's music has influenced his band The Shrines. To set the stage, we'll first hear some of the King Khan and Barbecue Show track Illuminations off 2015's album Bad News Boys. And then I'll be back with King Khan for part one of our Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
The light in the dark came from
with you today for your Coolest Conversations podcast here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and I'm joined by the greatest contemporary purveyor of rock and soul, His Royal Highness King Khan, who in addition to being an ambassador of music and visual arts, founded the Global Solidarity Forever organization, which seeks to unite international artists to global causes. How are you, Your Majesty?
Very good, very good, very good. Thank you. Honored to be here.
All right, man. Well, we're going to talk about this Global Solidarity Forever organization. But first, I want to ask you, you live in Berlin, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So here in the U.S., we hear about how Germany is one of these places that has had a very good response to dealing with the COVID-19 virus. Fewer cases, fewer deaths. And though I understand that some of Europe is undergoing a second wave here in the U.S., we never finished the first wave.
Right.
So have you and your family been able to remain healthy since the virus's outbreak?
We have, actually. What happened to us was basically that my wife had a cancer removed a month before the virus began.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a completely unexpected thing. And then we had to wait 6 months for her to get her checkup again to make sure that everything was clear, and thank God, like, everything is good. So for us, the whole COVID thing was kind of like a wait. In general, Germany has really responded very nicely. You know, they were able to give everyone a little bit of money quite quickly when it started in the beginning. There is a second wave happening, and unfortunately, you know, even in Germany, like, you look outside, you go outside, you have a lot of people not wearing masks. I feel that there is a kind of general laziness towards it.
Yeah. In fact, I saw that, here, I'm sure you're familiar of having heard about sort of an anti-mask movement, but I did see that in Berlin, that was maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, but there was a big anti-mask rally.
Yes.
That's happening there.
There was a really, that rally was so surreal. There were hippies marching side by side with Nazis, and it's like you know, you wonder, because you laugh at, like, you know, oh, I wonder what the future is going to be like, and then when you see a glimpse of this, you know, it really kind of scares the shit out of me, like, to see hippies and eco people, whatever, I don't know what you call them, yeah, marching by the side of Nazis and all of them complaining about being forced to wear masks. So
it makes me think of the Tom Lehrer song, and in the lyric there he sings, "We'll all go together when we go." And I think that song is actually about you know, a nuclear apocalypse, but it's just, you know, sort of ties in idiots marching together regardless of perspective, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about something a bit more positive, right?
Sure,
this Global
sure, sure.
Solidarity Forever organization. Tell me, what is it? What is it?
Basically, I had made friends with Malik Rahim of the Black Panthers of Louisiana. He was a Black Panther in the 70s, and in 2005, during Katrina, he started co-founded this thing called the Common Ground Relief Organization. Mm-hmm. And basically, Common Ground was, they were the only people that really helped the victims of Katrina. You know, he helped over 80,000 people, you know, relocate, build, helping them build. And, you know, there were all sorts of different actions he took, and basically he got thousands of volunteers from all over America who were predominantly white, actually, who came down and helped him. And for him, the whole storm was kind of a catharsis too, because before that, you know, he had spent his whole life basically not trusting white people, you know, and he was a militant in the Black Power movement, you know, early on in the 70s. He was one of the leaders of the Black Panthers of Louisiana. And I think he went through this catharsis and realized that, you know, he had to fight for environmental peace and justice. And so he started this thing, Common Ground. You know, he had several health clinics under him. He was just doing so much good for the community of New Orleans and has helped so many people. So I had become friends with him because I had made this soundtrack for a film called The Invaders, which was about a Black Power group in Memphis in the late 60s. And The Invaders, the story is quite special. It's about how Martin Luther King was really impressed by their work. You know, The Invaders were a militant Black Power group, but then they also they also did breakfast programs for children. They did, like, homework programs, you know, like, did all sorts of amazing things on the side to help the community. They were also the ones that went to every nook and cranny of Memphis and convinced all of the gang children, you know, throw down their weapons and stop attacking each other, yeah, you know, and work for the greater good. So when Dr. King saw that what great things they were doing, he naturally wanted them to be a big part of the Poor People's Campaign. So when Martin Luther King had his peaceful marches in Memphis, the Invaders were asked to be like people on the sideline just to make sure that everything is running okay in a march. A bit like security guards, but not.
Yeah.
They were kind of like on the sidelines just watching, making sure that nothing screws up, you know?
Yeah.
So when they were doing this, then when the violence started, they were the ones who were blamed for the violence, which was entirely a lie. You know, it was the police that started the violence. It was the same tactics that they're using now, you know, COINTELPRO and all this, like, these guys, the police knew to lay some bricks down in the certain area to instigate someone to pick up a brick and throw it into the store windows. And the stores wanted that shit to happen because then they could collect insurance money from that whole thing. So there was actually like a big economic side plan to like causing and inciting riots. And basically, I did the music about the Invaders, you know, and John B. Smith, who is the founding member of the Invaders, he was a Vietnam War veteran. He and the director, Pritchard, they showed the film in New Orleans at a, I think it was some kind of Black Panther party film festival.
And so, let me interrupt for a moment. Yeah. Let me ask you, exactly when is this? When was the film made and when was it shown in New Orleans then?
When it was shown in New Orleans, it wasn't completely finished yet.
Okay.
And so it's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. And we got great news, actually, like the rapper Nas, his company, it's called Mass Appeal. They're going to be putting it out. Yeah, we have some like amazing people involved. I won't say any names right now because I don't want to jinx it, but there's a Pulp Fiction connection. That's all I'll say.
So the film has been shot. It hasn't been released yet. When was it exhibited or shown in New Orleans?
This was a few years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
Basically, I was doing these art exhibitions with my giant
tarot cards.
Black Power tarot cards. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So whenever I would do an exhibition, I did, you know, many in like Holland, Spain, Oslo, you know, in Oakland and San Francisco, Colorado. So whenever I would do these exhibitions, I would actually ask the gallery to fly in John B. And then we would have like him giving some lectures about his whole history with civil rights, you know, and it was really an attempt to just, you know, start a conversation with people about like the misunderstanding that most people have about Black power, you know. I feel like now, especially, you know, with what's going on, the way that Black power activists were organizing each other, you know, and like, or in difficult times and like where everyone was against them, you know, be it the police or the government, you know, and all these, they were trying to, you know, basically they were hunted and killed even. Yeah. I mean, like, look what happened to all the Black Panthers, you know.
Right. Let me get forever, this straight then. Yeah. So the Invaders is screened, or some early cut of it is shown in New Orleans. And that's when right. Malik Rahim, he attends that. And then
they all went to his house after the screening. And his house is a very historic building, because it's like, that's where the Black Panthers, you know, had their meetings in the '70s. And this is the same place where they had Common Ground in 2005. So his place has been almost destroyed by the fact that he was housing thousands of people at a time. He's got some property and stuff. And like, it was a place where all the volunteers were going to stay, and they were putting all sorts of, you know, relief equipment and all kind of stuff in his house. So his health went through hell basically during this whole process. And one of the initiatives that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to fight and try to get his house recognized as a true site of consciousness. You know, because interestingly enough, just a few blocks down the street, there was the house of William S. Burroughs, where he lived there for 1 year, from 1948 to 49. And that was the house that was described in the book On the Road. So, yeah. So it's really amazing. But Algiers Point, this area in New Orleans, is 15th Ward, is a very interesting place in terms of like in jazz music and in beatnik culture. You know, this was the breeding ground for a lot of amazing music and thought and creativity. You know? So the American government has given a plaque to that building where Burroughs lived. You can imagine he lived there for 1 year. You know, he killed his wife like 2 years later. Than that, in another place. I'm just, you know, when look at why isn't Malik Rahim's house given a plaque, you know? And like, I mean, it's a symbolic gesture and everything. And like, it's not something that I want to just throw all my eggs in that basket and just try to get something like that recognized. Because, you know, of course, all these people in like, especially in New Orleans, as conservative, crazy, lunatic kind of people in the government, they're not going to want to give a militant Black power figure a plaque, even though it's so well deserved. I mean, because if you see all the work he's done in his whole life, it's always been sacrificing his own life for the good of the community and good for other people.
So the good that he's doing for the community right now, that ties to your organization.
Yes.
But Just Insulin, the Just Insulin Initiative. Isn't that tie between?
That's the first thing that we did.
All right, explain what that is then.
So basically what happened was that when COVID started, I hadn't talked to Malik in a few months. So I called him up and just wanted to see how he was doing. And it was really heartbreaking because he was talking about how he'd lost hundreds of friends in his community, hundreds of African Americans who had diabetes already. And because of they couldn't treat their diabetes properly because they had no access to insulin because they couldn't afford it, or they were actually rationing insulin, which is even more dangerous than not taking it. These people were dying, and there was hundreds of people that he knew who had passed from this, and he was really frustrated and sad. When he told me this, it just broke my heart, and it was like, as soon as I got off the phone, I was just racking my brain trying to figure out how can I address this and help this situation right away. So what I came up with was the idea of doing the Just Insulin Initiative. And when I say Just Insulin, it means two things. It means the fact that, yes, it's just insulin. It's like a very simple solution to this thing. And it's also justice, like just insulin, fair insulin, you know? So when I reached out to him and told him I want to start this Just Insulin Initiative, you know, and inform people about like how they can help people in COVID, donate money to Malik Rahim, to his house, you know, and get help to these people that is really needed, you know. So I started doing this, and then amazingly enough, I had my Black Power tarot cards for sale. I had about 200 or 300 decks left from the last batch, and I decided that I'd sell these cards for $100 a pop. you know, the $100 gave you a coloring book of the deck, and a reading. So I would call the person up personally, and anyone who bought that deck, I'm still doing it. You can go on my Bandcamp and order a deck. So basically, I was able to amass, almost $5,000 in like 2 or 3 weeks. I was doing readings every day. What was amazing was that the people who were buying the readings and buying the decks were tons of activists, you know, and suddenly I realized that I'm getting connected to the people who would right away be able to help the situation, you know. So mm-hmm. One of the most amazing people was Deborah Levy, who is a psychologist in New Orleans, and she is a part of a consortium of doctors that are all in New Orleans who are all kind of getting together, bounding together, and what they want to try to do is, you know, start these free health clinics for the people who really need it. So Deborah, for example, she had not known about Malik Rahim. And so when she bought my deck, you know, I read her cards. And then after that, I asked her what she did. And she was like, oh, I'm a doctor. And then boom, like, so now she's working on a petition to get a bunch of doctors to sign it to help us. Basically, one of the things is we want to make a database and kind of like a Facebook kind of like a profile thing where if you have diabetes, you can type in your profile. You can tell which kind of diabetes you have, what kind of insulin you require, and if you have insulin to give, you know. And so we're starting small. We want to do this in New Orleans exclusively at first.
Specifically, the thing you just described, this database, that this is for New Orleans.
Yes, for now it would be New Orleans. Ward. When we implement this, it would be for the city of New Orleans. And then based on the success of that, we could replicate that in other cities. You know, but if you could imagine, if you're diabetic and you're in some part of the city that you haven't been and suddenly you need insulin, you can just log on to your site and find out, oh, there's this person right next to me here. Basically, it's just a tool, right? And then the other thing that we wanted to do was in Algiers, we got Malik Rahim is a partner, has a house that we could renovate and turn into like the Just Insulin house. And what we wanted to do there was kind of like have a depository where we could actually store insulin and that people, diabetics, could actually just directly come there and get it. But of course, you know, with all this kind of stuff, we realize that there's a lot of levels of, you know, getting doctors involved, making sure that the insulin is safe, it's refrigerated properly. But for me, it's like, I'm really happy to do this work. I mean, I do it from Berlin, you know, and like, you'd be amazed at like the amount of things that I've been able to do in the past few months, just sitting here in my house, trapped in my house in Berlin. Because what I basically realized that, you know, now that all my shows are canceled, you know, I'm a big fireball of energy, you know. And I didn't know what the fuck to do. You know, I was sitting here and then calling Malik at that time, you know, and like, you know, he had gone through a really depression because basically Common Ground Relief and all the other organizations that he was involved in, they were stolen from him because the FBI and the CIA planted a undercover agent to go and infiltrate his whole thing. And so this undercover agent gained Malik's trust and like, you know, pretended to be his friend, and then was able to go and dismantle and destroy all the work that they were doing. And this is very troublesome to me. But like, you know, that they were doing this also in the 50s, in the 60s, and you know, there's a history of this kind of attack on what they call dissidents, but what I call, you know, community help. So I was, you know, when I talked to Malik and I got raised the money, you know, I sent him like $5,000. He was able to pay his back taxes because he was about to get thrown out of his house for this was all in a way. I feel like it was some kind of divine intervention that made me cross paths with him again in this situation. And also for him, you know, he was just really happy that. You know, you got me being in Berlin, organizing and figuring out stuff and how to help the community in New Orleans.
So,
you know,
the Global Solidarity Forever organization grew out of your relationship with Malik and Common Ground. And your first sort of initiative with that is this Just Insulin program. Okay, so are you reaching out to other artists to have them also contribute?
Well, you know what? I'm doing actually. I've had people contribute art. Like for example, Mike Diana did some art for me, cartoonist. But actually, to be honest, right now we're focusing on. I'm making a couple of kind of like TV show things. One is for a music festival in Holland called Le Guess Who. And you can go online, or if you see like the globalsolidarityforever.com, there's like a couple of videos that we've made about Malik and about what we're doing. But the, you know, there, all this crazy stuff has happened in Louisiana. Like, you know, there was the Lake Charles got demolished by that last hurricane. You know, one of the initiatives also we have is called the Save the Wetlands Initiative, which is basically involves going to the wetlands and planting this tall grass, a special kind of tall grass.
And so, and these wetlands that you're talking about are specifically in, because I mean, there are wetlands all over the U.S. that are jeopardized, but these are in Louisiana.
Exactly, near New Orleans. And basically, Malik has said that, like, if you plant a certain type of tall grass, what you are dampening the hurricane, and like you're actually adding like something to filter out the debris that comes through the hurricane. So, I mean, Malik is a guy, you know, he's lived all his life. He was living in the Maroon, you know, which is the area that is just like a swamp area that black people and Native American people would go and live peacefully because the slave masters were afraid to go in that area because of all the crocodiles and snakes and all kind of stuff. So he comes from a very incredible part of America. And for me, musically, this is just a dream come true, because I can tell you, you know, the biggest inspirations for me to start the Shrines was New Orleans R&B and Sun Ra. You know, like when I had moved to Germany, I remember this Saturday Night Fish Fry record and also like a best of compilation of New Orleans R&B. You know, like even with when I was playing with the Spaceships earlier, you know, R&B and rock and roll were so important to me. And I feel like they're so connected to the revolutionary movements, you know, like especially if you look at, I mean, you got James Brown singing I'm Black and I'm Proud. You got Mighty Hannibal, you know, who wrote Hymn Number 5 in 1963, you know, basically a protest, a Vietnam protest song. And Hannibal was one of my mentors, too. So I feel like it's not far away from my own world of music to start raising money and awareness for these causes, you know, and
let's go back to the music here for a second. Yeah. I mean, of course, agree that you mentioned James Brown and Mighty Hannibal and, you know, 60s, a time of protest and so forth. But let's not forget, and I think this ties more directly with New Orleans R&B and its music history, is that, you know, it was really going on in the 50s where these guys are doing, you know, black music, but it's crossing over to wide audiences. And that's putting the pressure on bringing, you know, to ending segregation right there. You know, the black and white audiences wanting to mix and not be kept separate. And I only mention that because I think it ties into, you know, your love of New Orleans and the sort of birthplace, cradle of a lot of American popular music, you know, jazz, mix of R&B and rock and roll.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, they were bringing people to New Orleans. I mean, like Ray Charles and Little Richard, they recorded like their greatest stuff in New Orleans. You know, a lot of people. I think that this is a place that's got to be protected, you know, and the way the world is going right now, I just feel like we're in a very big state of flux. But I have a lot of faith that whatever is going to be born out of this, you know, right now we're just seeing all the extremes rise and fall, you know, like the snakes are getting shooed from the jungle, you know, because the storm is coming. But I think that there's going to be very beautiful, fertile land that's going to be made from all of this, you know, kerfuffle that we're going through, because it's the first time that we're actually faced with a giant mirror to look at, you know, and examine what we really are. You know, now people have no jobs. They have time on their hands to figure out what they can do, you know, how they can preoccupy their minds. I feel like this was a very necessary step because, you know, the way that the world was pumping, it was going to collapse. You know, the machine was going to break. And so with the help of people like Malik Rahim, you know, you could find out, like, it's easy to help out in the situation, you know, and global solidarity is exactly what we need. It's like you don't have to. I mean, if you can go out and march and do all that kind of stuff, but you can also just show your support in other ways spiritually, you know. And I feel like, you know, this whole process, I got to say, I've become really so close with Malik Rahim and his family, you know. And, you know, we have a little Global Solidarity Forever family right in Algiers. We meet every day on Malik's porch, you know, from his house. And like, I'm on a little tablet. About 50% of my conversations with Malik are actually about, like, I'm like, hey, Malik, remember this song, Trick Bag? You know, I saw you kissing Willis across the fence. You know,
oh, yeah, man, I got Trick Bag, the Earl King song, in my jukebox here behind me.
Oh, man. And then Malik will start singing, and then, like, You know, so that's one thing that I think that people don't understand is that when we do this kind of revolutionary work, when we do this kind of activism, there is your soul glows. There is a happiness and a purity, you know, and a high that you get from this. And that is, you can't compare it to anything else, you know, and you just have to try and be compassionate. Just, you know, understand the suffering of others, make it your own, figure out a way to help them, even if it's a small gesture.
Yeah. As these people are trying to figure out a way to contribute, to help, where can they go online to find out more about
You could globalsolidarityforever.com, and then on that site. So one thing that I started was an ambassador of Global Solidarity Program. Mm-hmm. And if you go onto our site, you click on the ambassadors part, and you'll see I have awarded this award to about many people that I feel deserved to, not only me, but me and Malik and Heather, my partner. So yeah, basically we chosen these people. For example, I gave an award to Noel Scott and Marshall Allen from the Sun Ra Orchestra. You know, I get because of their role in spiritual jazz. Because if you really think about spiritual jazz and free jazz was so wrapped tightly around a Black Power and liberation of you know, African Americans back in the day, and still is. I gave an award to this band called the Warumpi Band. They're from Aboriginal Australians. I did an interview like a few months ago, and with the only Aboriginal radio station in Australia. It's called Koori Radio. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, the announcer was a big fan. We started talking, and then he sent me this band, Warumpi Band, and I swear to God, I listened to it every day. And while I was listening to that music, I was putting out all of these ideas and like what I wanted to do with the Global Solidarity Forever. So I decided, hey man, they should get an award. And the thing is, when you're awarding these people have never been really acknowledged for any of the things that they've done in their whole life, you know, and they should have been. And I feel like the way I started this thing was that there was a nonprofit in Germany, in Hamburg, called Viva Con Agua, and they wanted me to work or do some kind of work with them. They were fans, and so I decided that I wanted them to do an award thing called the Ambassador of Water Award, because their whole thing is about water, and like they go to Africa, they go to Cuba, they go to Haiti, and they build water filtration systems for poor communities, and they've saved millions of people. They're huge. They're very, very big nonprofit in Germany. And so my idea was that they should make an award Ambassador of Water, and they should give it to civil rights leaders from the 60s, people who deserve it for all of the life that they sacrificed, you know, for the mission. John B. Smith was the first one to receive the Ambassador of Water Award, and they made a ceremony for him in Hamburg, and it was a really cool big deal. And so I got Malik Rahim the same award. The reactions I was seeing that people were doing to these awards, it was so heartwarming for me, and I realized that as the Global Solidarity for movement, we have to also acknowledge all sorts of people that are doing great things right now. You know, and what we should, we're making a kind of a web and a net of people that, like, it's not about donations, it's not about anything, it's just about supporting you and like telling, like, for example, there's this man who I awarded, his name is Shar Habil Ahmed, like, and this guy was a king of Sudanese jazz, and this is shit I never even knew about, but there's a label in Berlin called Habibi Funk, and they put out an album of this guy, and it's incredible. It sounds like if Ike Turner and Gina Washington were in an African body. No joke, it sounds it's so R&B based, and like, you know, you hear the guitar playing is totally rumbling fucking Ike Turner, and you know, it's so surreal. Wow. And so I gave him an award. He's an 80-year-old guy in Sudan. You know, just it's basically just to reach out your hand and be like, thank you for doing what you do. Your music is fueling our movement. Well, down in Louisiana, in a New Orleans, I love my mashed potato, yeah. Baby, all the folks, they do it till they turn green. Then they start to do the itch. I made the twist and the shuffle.
Laying the mashed potato itch on us was King Khan and the Shrines. The song, originally on their album Three Hairs in Your Mind, it got released back in 2001. And that brings part one of our Coolest Conversations with King Khan to an end. Thanks to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And next week, join me for part two, where we'll talk about the shows King Khan and Barbecue were able to do back at the beginning of 2020. We'll also discuss the status of his various other music projects, and the animated short Retribution Now, a collaboration between him and his daughter Sabalu. That's your next week's Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.